You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey. To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is another episode of To the Journey.
To the journey!
And as you can probably already tell, Tristan is not here with me. He is on an away mission for this week, and so with me, I have, via the Pathfinder link, Lieutenant Philip Gilfus from Earl Grey.
Hi, it's great to be here. Now, I figured, TTJ, you know, this is like your fourth season, right? So I'm the hot new bombshell replacing the brainy Kes Tristan, right?
Maybe?
I mean, I wore this.
We didn't talk much about that. This is a little bit of a shock to me, and I'm not sure if I like the way the show is going in direction here. Bombshell?
I'm not putting on this cat suit for nothing, Char.
Well, I guess, it would be a really good rating stunt.
Oh, yeah.
Let's try it. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I mean, look, I know I'm on here just for my appearance on a podcast where everyone cannot see me, but my character will eventually evolve.
Yeah, but you know what? I do have to tell you, that cat suit is very becoming.
Well, you know, I'm thinking of changing colors eventually, but we're going to go with translucent right now.
You know what? It works for you. Silver really is your color.
It brings out my eyes.
Oh, I was going to say it brings out your nanoprobes.
Hey. My eyes are up here, Char.
I'm sorry. I can't help myself. I mean, it's right there. Okay. Anyway. Enough on that. That is not this week's topic. What we are talking about is flashbacks we wanted to see on screen that we never got on the show. And this was a listener-submitted topic because we entertained suggestions from our listeners. And the person who submitted this one was Kathleen Robertson. So thank you for doing that, Kathleen. We'll tell the rest of you how you can submit a topic for consideration in the closing of the show when we tell you how to contact us and all that good stuff. But for now, let's just dig in. When you think of episode flashbacks, and Voyager did have some, what is the first thing that comes to your mind like, man, what a missed opportunity that we didn't see this?
Well, you know, if only there was some episode I can think of about flashbacks in Voyager. I mean, what would you call it? Like, so that would be about flashbacks that would, like, that just came out and said it. I don't know. It'll come to me. I'm not that great on Voyager episode titles, I'll admit. But it'll come to me.
You just got to be really simple about it. You would just call it flashback.
Okay, you're right. That would probably do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Well, you know, I think it was one of these things. I was actually sitting and thinking about this topic, and it was funny mentioning flashback because I remember thinking about different characters and making a list of like, man, we should have seen. And sort of half jokingly, I wrote like anything about Tuvok because man, we just never knew anything. Then I'm like, wait a minute, flashback. And then there was the episode where we saw his childhood of when he had the schoolyard crush on the girl and he got all upset when she moved away and he met the Kolan our master. I'm like, oh, they actually showed us pretty decent amount of Tuvok flashbacks. So
I mean, when you have a whole episode about Tuvok having flashbacks, yes. Like literally.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did, but you know what? He was such an underused character. I can see where you're coming from on that just because, well, we could have known a lot more about the guy, flashbacks or not.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and I got to know that he knows how to make tea. So obviously as someone who does a tea-based podcast, you know, that was pretty cool to learn.
Relevant.
Yeah. You know, I was reading the recent issue of Star Trek magazine, which is celebrating the Voyager anniversary, that's coming up here, or
yes.
Is here. And then they were sort of talking about different characters, and I think they were interviewing Rick Berman, and he was admitting that, unfortunately, we didn't, because we had an episodic approach, we couldn't focus on all the characters. So I think this is actually a great topic because there are obviously all the characters we love in Voyager, but we would have loved to see them even more and learn even more about their origin stories. You know, what would Neelix issue number one, what would the origin story be?
Ooh. And Neelix is such an interesting character because behind that smiling face is what I call the sad clown. Mm-hmm. He's got a very kind of dark and depressing and painful past. But what was he like as a child? We never really knew much about his upbringing.
Who read him stories? Who told him ghost stories? Who taught him to fry his first Leola root?
Right? These are things that we don't know. And so one of the first places my mind did go to when considering things for this episode was Neelix. And I would have loved to have known something about his childhood. I would have wanted to see a little Neelix, I don't know, doing anything, really.
Flying his first shuttle and punching his first Kazon.
Maybe he would be learning to fly his first shuttle. I mean, it really could have been anything with, I don't know, his mom, his dad, his sister. Mm-hmm. The way he spoke about his sister, I really would have actually preferred that over anything.
Yeah, and I think the thing about doing this topic and coming from, you know, more of my TNG stuff that I do, I think this is a great topic because it kind of makes you admit, I think for those folks who watch Voyager and all like, you know, whatever, it's so episodic, you didn't focus on characters, but like Neelix, for instance, we actually learn a lot about him. We learn about his sister, we learn about his beliefs of the afterlife, we learn about, mm-hmm. you know, the war that he went through, and I mean, to me that revealed so much about his character, and I know this isn't a Neelix episode. I think his character is much more like you said, Char, that he may be suffering from PTSD from the war, and even though he didn't necessarily do that fighting, but just seeing all those people die, that's maybe he's covering this whole time, making jokes and trying to, you know, do anything to make people feel better just so he doesn't have to think about this big past. And so we actually have seen a lot of characters that we may not actually think that we saw.
Right, yeah. No, and I do agree. I definitely think Neelix is trying to cover up all that pain with a big smile and a jolly laugh and a joke.
And better than coffee.
Yeah. Success rate, I mean, there's hits and misses when it comes to cheering other people up as far as Neelix goes.
Though, speaking of Neelix, I think there is one origin story in Neelix issue number one, origin story, that I would have liked to see. And that actually is about Kes. When Neelix
met
Kes. Yes, that to me, I mean, we get a little bit of it in Caretaker, but not really. I mean, we get like Kes, you know, escaped, but like, what was Neelix doing on the Ocampa planet? Why did he meet her? What did she see in him? I mean, I'm not trying to suggest anything, but like, how did that happen?
No, I am totally with you. I want to know why and how these two got together. And I think I kind of have a scene in my head where Kes has come to the surface for the first time. And somehow in all of this, oh my God, sunlight is so bright out here. And then Neelix, they find each other. And then, what is it that brings these two together? There's an adventure there.
What music played when they first saw each other?
The Rickroll music.
I had the time of my life.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just saying it could have been an 80s movie. You don't know.
I'm not going to judge. It could have been. But I don't know. I definitely think that would have been a fantastic moment for both of those characters.
Yeah, I'll say criticism I have is that I'm doing my Voyager rewatch and I'm in second season now. And I'm just, I mean, I always loved Kes, but doing this rewatch, I'm now double the Kes fan now. But I mean, the relationship between Neelix and Kes, just to me, and it's not original thought, it's like, did they ever do more than shake hands or something? You know, I just doesn't buy it for me. But of course,
kiss a few times.
Yeah, I know. But again, I'm sure I'm judging by Terran standards. I know that's racist and speciesist of me. You know, Accompans and Talaxians do it differently. But yeah, so I just think that would have been interesting to learn more about where this relationship came from and what it meant. Because I mean, you know, for Kes to be like, yeah, I'll totally go on this alien ship with you, Neelix. You know.
Yeah, all we really get from that is the fact that Kes is obviously adventurous to have left the safe confines of the underground Ocampan city and go to the surface. So she has a spirit of adventure, but to really take that leap is a whole other thing. And so Yeah, we could know a lot more about these two, and then maybe that would actually give the relationship more credibility, too.
Right.
That might have helped a lot, actually, for people like me who never really liked that relationship, never really cared if it, you know, kept going or not, and it might have changed my mind.
And why does Neelix have that green monster? Why does he get so jealous? Who hurt him, Char? Who hurt him?
Again, another thing we could have learned about, either through a flashback or just a story. Things about being in love. Everybody has a broken heart at some point in their lives. Whatever happened to Neelix, man, he really got trashed upon.
He did. Is there an origin number one issue of any of the characters that you're dying to write or see?
You know, for like the top of my list or something like that, I wanted to kind of see the moment where Tom had the falling out with his father.
The Admiral.
Maybe after the crash and he confessed and all that. Yeah, Owen Paris. Just seeing, I don't know. I think there's a lot of emotion there that we could have really just, we had a really powerful scene out of where he wants to please his father so badly, but he's failed in the worst possible way. And of course, emotions are going to be sky high and they're going to blow up at one another. And then what? And that kind of, I think, would make a good lead-in into why he chose to go to the Maquis. Which leads me to another pick. So I'm just going to keep going, if you don't mind. And that is, I want to see how Chakotay recruited B'Elanna into the Maquis. Yeah? Uh-huh.
Okay.
For one thing, because Suzanne Abbott would really appreciate this. Chakotay in his leather pants, in his Maquis gear.
Right.
And then, of course, for Tristan, Roxanne Dawson in leather pants. I see absolutely nothing wrong with this at all. Just with that information alone, everybody wants to see this.
Oh, yeah. And of course, I have to assume, because of my other co-host, Daniel Prue, that Ro probably introduced the two of them. That's probably fanon.
A cameo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Why the heck not? We can do whatever we want with these hypotheticals.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yes, let's do that.
And you could even make Commander Eddington from Deep Space Nine come in there, too. So, you know,
you could have an ultimate crossover because all these people did know each other. They were in the Maquis.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one thing I really, really wanted to see the whole way through, and we never got it, was how did he get B'Elanna into the Maquis? And what got Chakotay into the Maquis a little more? Like, what was the defining moment where he just absolutely couldn't turn back?
I know on TTJ here, a lot has been the, you know, the whole dropping the Maquis storyline and the conflict with them in Starfleet in season one and blah, blah, blah. But, like, mm-hmm. I mean, I think exploring, because, I mean, to me, to a certain extent, you know why everyone joined Starfleet. I mean, it could be different reasons, but, you know, exploration or, you know, parents or, you know, there's like a limited list. But like, mm-hmm. why you joined the Maquis, there's 100 reasons. I mean, we heard some of them in the season one ending there, or episode with, not Training Day. Tuvok does not play Denzel Washington. But yeah, in Learning Curve.
Maybe he should, though. That would be actually kind of interesting.
Yeah, but in Learning Curve, like, you actually got some of the Maquis saying, like, well, I just joined because, you know, I had no direction and that was the only thing there was. And I, you know.
Right. And, bunch of misfits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some people joined for the actual, you know, to protect their land. And some people maybe just hated Cardassians. And some people mm-hmm. just like shooting, you know, like a suitor, you know, just crazy.
Right. It was a good excuse to kill people. Well, in Chakotay, we do know that he did join mm-hmm. because of he was defending his homeworld.
Right.
But that's about all we know.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that really could have provided more character moments of why is each of the Maquis there? It could have been either the people we knew. Half of them, of course, were spies. Tuvok, Seska. I think the entire ship was you know.
Oh, gosh. And you could have even brought Seska back for a flashback if you wanted to do something, say, after, I don't know, season 2 or 3 where she's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. She did come back a couple times for worst case scenario and then shattered for flashback scenes. So, hey, why not have more in the party? It was great. Martha Hackett is awesome.
I always like to think of Seska as the Wesley Crusher of Voyager. You know, you just bring her back every season. That's all you do.
I don't know. Every season might be a little difficult to pull, but it would be nice to see her in a flashback. That would make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly.
You mentioned Tom Paris earlier. To me, they, or of course, as we call him on Earl Grey, Nick Locarno, but
right.
it would have been interesting to see Nick/Tom's the actual incident, like Flash, because there's really, and you can correct me, the only mention that I can think of is Caretaker. Like, what actually happened?
Yeah, I believe you're right. The actual description of what happened, yeah. Might have been referenced a couple times, but the details are in Caretaker, yeah.
Yeah, because I was watching Non Sequitur, or It's a Wonderful Kim, as I like to title that one.
That's what it should have been named. That's so much better.
I know, yeah. And so I remember that in that sort of future, present, whatever you want to call that, Paris is shown as being charged with treason, but I think that's because of his Maquis activities. But like, what actually happened? Like, because Paris jokes in Caretaker, oh, the ghost of the three, you know, dead, whatever, came and taught me the true meaning of Christmas. But like, were there really three dead people? And like, what did Tom do? And I kind of never understood Tom's Starfleet background. Like, was he a lieutenant junior grade? Because he mentions in Non Sequitur that he served on the Exeter, if I remember that correctly. So I'm like, what did he do? And you know, all that stuff. It just would have been known Tom's background a little bit more. We just kind of knew he was bad boy who loves oceans randomly, 20th century, and black and white sci-fi, you know, so.
Yes, well, in the novels, and I don't know if you have read a whole lot of Voyager novels, I don't think you do dabble much in the novel first,
well,
do you?
In preparation for replacing Tristan, I know I was supposed to tattoo Mosaic onto my arm, but I did not. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, you better have that done before next week.
I know.
If you really want to commit to this job. It's kind of a requirement.
I know.
Yeah. But anyway, take a drink because I'm going to mention the novels. Pathways does explore a little bit about the incident that kind of got Tom into this place. But seeing as how the novels are not necessarily canon, this would be the chance to make more of what Jerry Taylor wrote in canon, though. And therefore, I think this is like doubly important.
Yeah, because I mean, it's sort of one of those things, because I think it's a very powerful to have this sort of second chance. Because that's really what Voyager is in many ways about. I mean, B'Elanna gets her second chance.
For a lot of people.
Yeah, Chief Engineer. I mean, I was not going to pick on every character. It's almost every character, except for maybe be Janeway and I don't know, maybe. But everyone sort of gets a second chance at it's a new mission and we're Starfleet now and what's going on. And even, like, I mean, when we talk about second chances, there's a whole character, 7 of 9, that gives a third chance. I don't know, fourth chance. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. But I mean, this basically Voyager is a second chance for all the characters.
It is for many of them. I mean, it definitely was for Tom. It was for B'Elanna. It was for Neelix, I would say. It was his chance to reform his life. Mm. Yeah, and then 7 of 9, of course, very much so. The Doctor,
you get a
I don't
first
know if
chance.
I'd call it a second chance. It was more of a first chance, yeah.
Yes.
But even so, I mean, yeah, it was a chance to develop into who he was. So that's an incredibly important thread for Voyager, most definitely.
Mm.
Now, that's one character that we really can't talk too much about in terms of flashbacks, because we've seen all of the Doctor's life thus far,
well,
from the moment he was activated.
Now, it would have been interesting because we had a certain member of TTJ, I'm talking about you, come on Earl Grey to talk Lieutenant Barclay. And it was said in the episode, Voyager episode, of course, Projections, that Reg, bizarrely, though this makes perfect sense, was responsible for the Doctor's interpersonal skills programming.
Right.
And so it would have been interesting if there was like some like problem, which there often was, but there was some problem with the Doctor's programming and there's a flashback to his development, because it wasn't just like, we uploaded him, he's done, but like that Mark One with Zimmerman. What was that like when they first made him? And you could have seen like sort of like the B4, except better, of the Doctor. Yeah. And that would have been interesting.
That would have been kind of cool to see Dr. Zimmerman doing that very first rough draft and having to maybe work on some of the rougher edges.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, God, we saw just about everything else. Yeah. Okay. I suppose that works for a flashback for the Doctor. I take that statement back.
Mm-hmm. When he was just a couple lines of code.
Right. That was his infancy.
Yeah, just a bunch of 0 1s. There were some binars involved, maybe. We don't know.
Maybe. They might have helped. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to flashbacks here, Harry Kim, I don't know. I have kind of a cutesy one.
Okay.
For him. I wanted to know what you think about this. We're recording this on Valentine's Day, so I guess maybe I'm in the spirit of things, but we did get Non Sequitur, which you mentioned earlier, where he goes back and he's in San Francisco with his girlfriend Libby, and he's a shuttle designer, and he has a big chance to get promoted to lieutenant, and then has to throw it all away in the name of restoring time and keeping continuity and like being where he's supposed to be and blah, 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 blah. I want to see the moment when he and Libby met.
Okay.
Wouldn't that be cute?
Well, to me, watching Non Sequitur, and this is kind of a criticism of almost all 24th century Star Trek series, is that do these people have, are they different out of uniform? Like, you know, we just see them on their job and doing their things. But like, to me, Non Sequitur, like, you kind of get a sense like Harry has this life outside of Starfleet. Like, you know, he has this nice big apartment. He has this girlfriend slash fiance, you know, at that version of the world. And, you know, you in clarinet there, but you kind of get a sense like, you know, like maybe he hangs on the weekend. And, you know, it's not just, you know, life on a starship doing all starship stuff all the time.
Yeah. You'd hope he'd have some hobbies and know how to relax and have a good time. And where do he and Libby go to dinner in San Francisco? Little details like that. Yeah, we don't get much of that, especially on Voyager. Because when they're hanging out, they are all still in uniform and they're on the holodeck, most likely. Although, we did get one instance where we saw Harry out of uniform that's very distinct in my mind, which was in season one, Prime Factors. He is actually wearing a shirt that Picard wore.
In Captain's Holiday.
Yes, thank you. That is the ugliest freaking shirt, too. Why did they reuse that?
Well, I'm just glad they didn't have Harry wearing Picard's nightwear, because I'm sure Garrett has nice, lovely legs, but I think they need to have
them.
A line. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, speaking of when characters met, what about when Kathy met Mark?
You know, that's another thing. Take another drink that happens in the novels. And it's actually a recurring thing because she knows him from childhood, but they reunite kind of later in life after they've split off their own ways, had their own lives for a while, and then fast forward like 10, 15 years and they meet up again.
Oh, where'd the puppy come from? Where'd her dog come from?
She found her in Mosaic in a snowstorm. She was alone.
So you're saying Janeway has a rescue?
It's a rescue.
Wow. So progressive.
Isn't that cute?
So progressive. Oh.
Yes, yes. And so that's how that happened. It would be kind of interesting, though, to see why those two got together, just because it is a little, I don't know. I find it a little different with, I mean, some people who are in the Starfleet life, I think, and you're former military,
mm-hmm.
right?
Correct.
So you tell me how hard this is where people outside the military don't really understand what the life is like. You have to move around quite a bit. You don't know what your next assignment is going to be, and you could die on your mission at any point. I mean, that's just a fact. And so with Starfleet, it's almost like other Starfleet officers really ought to marry. But with Mark being a civilian, is it the fact that he is grounded, you know, the fact that he wants to stay on Earth, that he's a stable figure that draws her to him, or what does she see in him? That's actually more of what I would want to know. And
right.
So what is your take on that as someone who has served in a military organization?
I mean, he doesn't have any tattoos that we know of. So what's she seeing him, right? What could he possibly have without a tattoo?
Well, he could have a tattoo and it could be bigger, but we just don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, there's actually not a lot of dual military couples. There are, but I think it's more common to sort of have a civilian married couples in the military. Because there's sort of couples can sort of take the civilian spouse can either take a fully engaged role, you know, I'm going to take part in all your activities and da 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 da, or I have nothing to do with that. You know, when you're home here, mm-hmm. you're out of it and we don't talk any of that stuff because I don't understand it. Or some sort of middle of the road approach to things. I mean, it's like any, like, well, it's not like any work, but it's similar to, you know, how much, you know, do you go to all your spouse's parties at their work, or do you just like, yeah, that's fine what you do, but anyway. So yeah, I mean, it's that's actually a good topic, because especially in Voyager, when you have a lot of people who are married on the ship suddenly away from their spouses, they're somehow
right.
pregnant,
like Ensign Wildman,
and even Carrie, you know, he talks about his kids and his wife,
right.
and then Tuvok,
mm-hmm.
another great example, of course. And
yes.
So, yeah, because it was like, this is supposed to be a 3-day tour. I believe this is how it was.
3-day tour.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of something else.
Yeah, a 3-week tour, I think they said. But
yes.
Anyway.
Okay, yes. But yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly, that has to come home to missing this family. And of course, luckily, you have a morale officer who can take care of those feelings for you.
I'm not going there.
Now, I do have kind of a flashback. When I was thinking about Voyager, there was a flashback I wanted to see, and it doesn't involve a character per se, but a broader character of Voyager. So it's a little left field, Char. So I hope you're sitting down.
Okay. I'm sitting down. I'm ready. Bring
now,
it.
As you may be aware, Voyager featured this one species. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's a little foreign sounding. Borg. That's it. So
sounds Swedish.
Yeah. So like you have this huge Borg featuring in the later seasons. Some may say too much, but whatever. It's there. But like, what if Voyager had decided to show in some way or the other the origin of the Borg?
Yeah, you could confirm or deny all these hypotheses, right? Was it V'ger? The whole thing with the Borg on Enterprise, how did that have an effect on the Borg? Something new entirely?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, that could have been very interesting, just because we don't really know. And I do, again, take a drink. I think this has been addressed in some novels. Tristan talked about this at some point when we talked about the Borg Queen. There is an origin story about how the Borg Queen came to be.
Well, I think if I remember correctly, and I actually did read this, there was a manga that did kind of, it was a TOS one, that kind of pointed in that direction. This may be a fandom. I'm just going to be in here for a second. Doctor Who. So there's the Fourth Doctor. There's an episode or a serial called Genesis of the Daleks, where the Fourth Doctor actually goes back in time to the beginning of the Daleks. And so that's what I'm kind of thinking of Voyager. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be time travel, because, you know, we do that a lot in Star Trek. But it could either be, like, something with the Queen or some flashback to Unimatrix Zero, or it could just be something where the crew or members of the crew are taken back, or, you know, Seven, you know, sure, why not, taken back to the beginnings of the Borg, and you know they do something, but they're helpless to stop it. But you know, you have to make this decision: do we, if we could stop the formation of the Borg, do we have the right to do that, save all these billions, trillions of lives? But then, is it genocide? And so, I mean, anyway, but that was sort of something I was thinking about. Like, we could have actually explained, because if Voyager is going to own the Borg, why not just own it all the way?
You know, I'll share my personal theory on how the Borg came to be. I figured they started out an organic species just like the rest of us, and using some social commentary from our own world here, they developed artificial intelligence that got to be so powerful that it took them over, and instead of being a little more human controlling machine, it was machine controlling human, and all of a sudden everybody has become this one big collective, and it becomes something way bigger than it was ever intended.
Now I'm just hearing like Jimi Hendrix's Over the Watchtower playing right now, and it just is revealed that they were Cylons, and they have been the entire time.
Fair enough.
Yeah, because I, again, in all this wondering about things, you know, oh, we should have seen these more characters. I do want to give Voyager credit, because again, I think it's sometimes too easy for Voyager critics to be like, oh, you're episodic, you don't show anything. Like, and again, this is where I'm going to need some help with an episode title. When Seven goes traveling in time, back in time, and we get to see Voyager actually being launched with Janeway.
Oh, Relativity.
Yes.
That's a great flashback-ish episode where we go through various phases of time. And I love that, because I love the idea of seeing Voyager pre-launch.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that episode for that reason. I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, because like I said, all these characters, we actually know more about them than we probably think we know about them. So, you know, yeah, we get
it's
to see.
It's possible. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I think we know a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of depth, we could have gone deeper.
Well, there was actually one character that I wanted to talk about briefly, and that's B'Elanna. Because, you know, Tristan's not here, so I have to bring up B'Elanna in his stead.
Please, he will appreciate it.
Well, here's the thing. We heard a lot about the mother, and we actually saw the mother, or did we? Wink. In Barge of the Dead.
Uh-huh.
But what about her father?
Well, remember, they do talk toward the end of the show via the Pathfinder link.
Mm-hmm.
They do reunite, and there is, I think it's in Lineage, a flashback to her childhood with her father and just before he left.
Oh, that's right.
B'Elanna and her mother.
Yeah. I just think there's a whole dynamic, because I mean, obviously that was always being explored with B'Elanna. And again, we get a lot more from her, because she talks about her time in the academy.
Mm-hmm. That's actually another thing I would love to see with B'Elanna is her academy days.
Mm-hmm.
Because she does talk about little things that could lead to some interesting stories there. I mean, she was on the track and field team. And then we know that she quit the academy. I think it was after her second year.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, I forget the name of one of her professors.
Right.
But
yeah.
She mentions, you know, oh, I don't think he was sorry to see me go. We mutually agreed that Starfleet wasn't for me. And I want to see maybe that falling out.
And I just want to see when Janeway first had her first cup of coffee.
I believe that was at age maybe 2.
Okay.
She takes a sip of mom's coffee or dad's coffee, and she just, my life has changed forever.
Because this is the dangers, by the way, kids, of having babies in the 24th century. Because if Kathy's first word was coffee and she was standing next to the replicator, she would just been like, the next thing you know, you have a hyped up 2-year-old.
Oh my gosh, I could see this. Poor Gretchen Janeway.
They're like, oh gosh, Kathy, stop bothering me. Here's some science books. Look, go do some experiments.
Yeah, here, learn some quantum mechanics. Just please sit down.
We were hoping to put her to sleep, but the next thing we know.
Yeah, then she has the caffeine crash and she sleeps for 18 hours straight. That actually would have been fantastic, a baby Janeway. It never would have made the show, but I do think maybe there is some fanfic that could stem from this idea.
Mm-hmm. And this is just one thing. This will be from right field, sorry, dead left field. You know, you have these characters and slash actors that we used in Caretaker that lasted like 4 minutes. But like, what if you brought them, and I can't really think of a good story why, but just like some flashback of like, you know, season 3 or season 4, we actually, and I forget their names, I'm sorry. But like the Bajoran, or excuse me, the Beta Z Ensign that was at the con officer, and then the first officer.
That was Scotty.
And was it Cavett? Lieutenant Commander Cavett, I think.
It was Commander Cavett. Yeah, and I don't remember the name of the doctor, but he was a jerk anyway.
Yeah,
so
but it would have been interesting to have some excuse to like bring, like it's almost like the All Good Things, you know, in TNG, but like have some excuse to just bring back like Janeway choosing her crew and then reflecting on her current crew or something or all that stuff.
Hmm, that would be an interesting idea. We never got to know a thing about any of those guys, so there is potential there for that. We could have maybe thought, oh, those would have been fantastic characters. Why'd you have to kill them off? Or, wow, good riddance.
Yeah, and I would love to see like the Utopia Planitia flashback of designing the Voyager ready room when the designer put in the wrong numbers and made it 5 times as big as it was supposed to be. That would have made sense. That would have made sense to me.
You're not going to let that go, are you, Gilfus?
I'm just saying the Galaxy class is like a closet compared to the Intrepid class for some reason.
It is awfully strange, right? Because the Galaxy class, people joke, is like the big Ramada in space. For its conference hall purposes, but then also it is one of the biggest ships in the whole fleet. And harkening back to something we mentioned earlier, there are a lot of civilians living on the Enterprise because in the 24th century, there are families on board Starfleet vessels. But on a ship like Voyager, it's too small for that under normal circumstances, and it's not meant to carry families on long deep space missions.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't remember Jean-Luc having his own personal dining room. I'm just saying.
That was the next place I was going to go. Yeah, there is absolutely no reason why Janeway had her own personal dining hall, except for like maybe dignitaries and guests of that nature. But how often was she doing that? Because that's what Jean-Luc does.
Yes.
Yeah, I would have reconsidered that use of a space on an Intrepid class vessel. But anyway. Flashbacks aren't the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week, and so here's a little glimpse at what else has been happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
I really, really, really hope that if they do that, they make Chang the villain, because, you know, Captain Chang instead of General Chang or whatever, you know? I mean, that just seems like the perfect way to go.
Earl Grey.
All right, Riker, we're promoting you to captain. I mean, you killed the last captain. We usually don't reward that. That's usually not our policy, but in this case...
Well, to be fair, he had spent some time on a Klingon ship.
The Orb.
But the Federation and Bajor as a member of the Federation would be helping rebuild Cardassia, and I could see, like, very much the relationship between the U.S. and Japan today. I could see the Federation and Cardassia having that kind of relationship moving forward.
To the journey!
Janeway has a very distinct pain noise.
Yeah, she kind of does.
You know what I'm talking about?
It sounds sort of like she's suffocating.
Yeah, it sounds like she's suffocating and sometimes, and I'm going to keep it clean, not always in pain.
The Ready Room.
He is the best cosplayer ever because he's so buried himself in his part that we have no idea who this guy is outside of the impersonation of Tuvok.
Exactly.
He's the Christian Bale of the Delta Quadrant.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
If I'm not mistaken, in any upcoming episode of Next Generation, we don't see full-grown golden retrievers running around the decks of the Enterprise. And I'm also a little worried that Captain Picard has never played with puppies.
Commentary, Trek stars.
But you'd rather see Red in charge than him.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Right.
Because you really want Porn Stash to go down.
Yes, yes, you do. And that sentence out of context sounds really strange.
Literary Treks.
As great as Picard is and his Picard maneuver, I don't think Picard straightening his shirt is going to help him when he's going up against the Riker maneuver.
Fair enough, yeah.
So. Axanar, the official podcast.
The changes that we've made, the change to the nacelles and several other aspects of these ships to make them distinct and not the same ships as in Star Trek 2009.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows. They are available on virtually any platform where you can get podcasts these days. None of them would be possible without the help of a sponsor, so let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
So before we close out, we have a couple of iTunes reviews to talk about.
Huzzah!
Yeah, huzzah! Yes, not one, but two this week. That is fantastic. And that's just in the U.S. iTunes store. If you are in a non-iTunes store and you leave us a review, we would appreciate it if you let us know because we don't check those all the time. It's kind of tedious. We have to go through every single store through every country, and there's like something like 80 to 90 iTunes stores. Ain't nobody got time for that. So if you just let us know, it makes our lives a lot easier. We have to thank Weight Loss Girl and Diva Flyer, and I love that username, that's fantastic, for not only giving us a 5-star rating, but for also writing awesome reviews. One thing that our reviews have been saying lately is that TTJ shows why we were and still are Voyager fans. And that is such a huge compliment, I think, because despite the show's faults, we know that they're there. I mean, it's still a damn good show. There's so much to love about Voyager, and the fact that we are here and we can celebrate it and other people are chiming in saying, yes, yes, me too, that's fantastic. And that's what's kind of keeping us going. It's good feedback for us. We feel the love, and we'll keep it going for everybody here on TTJ.
As you famously have said, Char, and I believe this is a direct quote from you, we're Voyager fans. Weird is part of the job.
That is correct. And I sort of said that. I can't take all of the credit, though. Now, as mentioned at the top of the show, we entertain ideas from listeners on TTJ. And so if you have a show idea that you want us to consider, there's a couple of ways you can do that. But first, before you do that, please visit trek.fm/TTJ, click the link in the second paragraph, and that will take you to a list of all the previous episodes that we've done. And I mean, we've surpassed 100 episodes now. That's a lot of talking. And so we get listener suggestions all the time, like sometimes on a daily basis. And so taking this step for us, making sure that we haven't already covered your topic, makes our lives a lot easier. And then if it passes that test and you have a novel idea, the best way to submit your topic is to go to trek.fm/contact, select To the Journey, and then let us know of your idea. That's also a way that you can write in the show for any other thing, whether you've got questions, comments. Let us know what you're thinking. But you can also tweet topic ideas to me or Tristan. My handle is OTheProfanity, and Tristan is at TheInsaneRobin. Now, Philip, When you're not Pathfinder linking with your friends over in the Delta Quadrant, where can people find you?
Well, if they want to find out what's happening in the Alpha Quadrant, except for the one episode where we did go to the Delta Quadrant. Actually, I guess two, technically. Anyway, we can find us each and every week here on Trek.fm on our show Earl Grey, where along with Darren Moser and Daniel Prue, we talk all things The Next Generation. Or they can reach me on Twitter, where my handle there is NC Public Servant. That's NC like North Carolina.
All right. And also, one more thing. Another way you can support the network is through you, the listener, and that is on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/trekfm and consider becoming a monthly subscriber. We have a lot of perks in it for you, and it helps us out immensely because, as Matthew Rushing likes to say, we are a listener-supported network, and that is the absolute truth. We couldn't do it without you guys. And so thank you to those of you who have supported us and will support us. And thank you for your consideration if this is the first time you've actually heard this somehow, and you're going to go there and support us. We need to thank our associate producers, too. While we're at it, Lisa Stevens is at Flip18 on Twitter. We'd like to thank her. And then we have a new associate producer of TTJ to thank, and that is Kenneth Tripp. So thanks, Kenneth, for being awesome and supporting TTJ and Trek FM.
Awesome.
All right. Now, this one's in the can, so let's talk about next week. What are we going to do, Philip?
Well, next week, of course, Tristan will be back here in this seat, and of course, it's been an honor for me to be here with this episode. But next week, Voyager, like all of Starfleet and Star Trek, has gone to strange new worlds and new civilizations. But one thing Voyager did almost more than any other series was explore the strange new world of the afterlife. Yes, that's right. We're going to be talking about TTJ, Voyager, and the great beyond, beyond the veil of tears.
And this was also a listener-submitted topic, by the way. It's submitted by some guy, Philippe Guilfous.
Oh, did you deliver me flowers?
Yeah. Is he here? Is there a Jean-Luc Picard? This is a topic that you yourself submitted some time ago, and we are going to tackle it now.
That's right. And I have to say, the first Trek FM show I ever listened to was To the Journey, and that's what got me involved as a listener and a fan, which I'm still a listener and a fan of, and got me involved in the network. So it is an honor for me to be here on the show that started it all for me.
Oh, that is too cool. And I thank you very much for co-hosting with me, since Tristan had a rather sudden away mission sprung upon him. And so thank you very much for that. And thank you for all that you do for Trek FM, because I love Earl Grey. And you can hear me on a recent episode of Earl Grey that came out this week. So check that out as well. There's a little more crossover. Until next week, everybody, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!